Welcome to the Movies to Watch Before You Die podcast. I am your host, Dylan, along with my cousin and co-host,
Gab.
along with my non-cousin and guest host. I'm pointing at you. I'm pointing
Kyle.
at
And
you.
I'm Kyle.
Woo!
Kyle's coming over again from the Film Realist pod because we did not agree that The Mask of Zorro was a Movie to Watch Before You Die, which I still think is a travesty, but he's going to
Well,
try
nobody
again.
cares. Yep,
Did
here
we
we go.
talk about how it just started trending about a month ago for no reason?
Did
These
it?
things always happen in
Yeah,
non-perfect
Gab's not on
timing.
Twitter, which is great. You don't want, it's a horrible place.
Yeah,
It's
no,
a
I'm happy.
cesspool of awful. But
Yeah.
about Dylan and I have been going back and forth on this, where I saw it about 2 weeks ago, where it was trending, where people were talking about Indiana Jones, and then someone sort of said, well, the best Indiana Jones movie of the 90s is The Mask of Zorro. And then it was just all this love for The Mask of Zorro. The YouTube channel I watch, Mr. Sunday Movies, did a thing on The Mask of
Yep.
Zorro, which I sent Dylan.
Wow. Well, Dylan, one of the podcast, one of the movies that Scott Interante was talking about, like possibly coming on with, was The Mask of Zorro.
Honestly, I rewatched the movie after we did the episode about it because it just was re I really enjoyed it. I love that movie. I'm like,
Okay.
how did I ever stop loving this movie? I was
All
wrong.
right.
I bought it on Blu-ray.
Good for you. Well, anyway, we're not here to talk about Zorro.
No, we're here to talk about The Great Mouse Detective from 1986. Am I right on that? I
Kyle,
am right on that.
you know what? I take it back. I was gonna dive into some personal questions, but I think before we do that, we need to talk about what this movie is about.
What's this all been about? What am I working toward?
You think you know everything about me, don't you?
I die at your bottom. I bloody well ought to.
So, Kyle, tell them what the movie's about.
Okay, so it's an adaptation of a children's book series, to my knowledge. And the best way that I always pitch it is it's mice as Sherlock Holmes characters.
Yeah,
And I have a
I would
question
agree with that.
about it later
Oh.
on once we kind of delve into stuff. I asked my wife and she went, I don't care. So I'm going to ask you two, and then hopefully.
Oh, I feel that she and I are kindred spirits in this.
Oh my God. I feel like I'll probably end up caring more than I should.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Let's see how close you came to the IMDb plot summary, which you did not because you were more succinct.
Oh,
IMDb
no.
said Basil, the rodent Sherlock Holmes, investigates the kidnapping of a toy maker and uncovers its link to his arch enemy, Professor Radigan.
Are they allowed to say Sherlock Holmes?
Yes, at this
He's a
point, he
public
was
domain
already public
character.
domain. He was public domain
Oh.
probably what, in the 70s? Because
Maybe
it's
longer
100
ago than that.
years.
Yeah,
Yeah, probably.
it's an 1800s character, for Christ's sake,
Yeah,
you know?
so that's why everyone was able to use him.
Yeah.
Speaking of, did you guys hear about the is it copyright that makes something go into the public domain when the copyright is over
Yeah, the
on
copyright
Steamboat
lapses.
Willie and like Winnie the Pooh and Peter Pan and all that stuff?
Yeah, they're coming out with like a whole Pooh-niverse, which
I
P-O-O-H-niverse,
was going to say,
like
you have
Winnie.
to spell that.
Yes. Winnie the Pooh and a bunch of other characters, they're all going to do a horror movie. And that feels very much like the cheapest of the cheap, like brand. We have some brand recognition. Let's pump out some movies and get
Yeah.
people into it.
Well,
And
it
from what I
kind of. understand, they're not changing Disney World. Like, there will still be the Winnie the Pooh ride, there'll still be Peter Pan, but they're just going to ignore the fact that they're like bastardizing these characters, which seems strange because I feel like Disney is the most powerful company on the planet. Why
Well,
not
they
just.
don't own the mask. It's a trademark of their version. That's why the copyright law is so intrinsically difficult. Steamboat Willie, the origin of that character and the death of Walt Disney, allows the initial interpretation of that character to hit public domain. And so the versions that Disney has, that's the version they can trademark. So
Interesting.
only Steamboat Willie is public domain, not
that's
Mickey
why, like,
Mouse, not
yeah.
any other design of Mickey Mouse, just that version.
Eventually, though, those things will reach public domain.
Yes, it takes like
No.
79 years after the creation, but
Yeah.
it used to be the original copyright law was something like, I feel like it was like 25 years or something, which is supposed to be, hey, you have enough time that you develop this intellectual property, you get to make your money off of it, and then it becomes free for everyone. And then you get corporations like Disney, the House of Mouse, which is like, no, that law doesn't seem good enough. And maybe if I give that politician just a bit of money, we can change those laws. And they sure have.
But I just feel like they shouldn't be allowed to like listen, I don't give a shit, right, personally, but like Mickey Mouse should not be public domain ever. That is the like what? How could that be?
It'll happen to Bugs Bunny probably next.
Yeah, it feels weird to hear Gab be like, but the corporations should own their ideas forever. We should never get a chance to do those.
Well,
things.
It's not even about the corporation. It's about the creator, right? Like a good example is, and this is the insanity of it, characters like Batman, Superman, it'll take a lot longer for a lot of the Marvel characters, but eventually it does happen. It's just
because that person died.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
date of origin
die,
and death of owner.
Your intellectual property can't belong to you anymore because you're dead.
Yeah, it's a lot more lenient than, say, music written by an artist, right? Because you can buy a dead person's catalog. Like right. Michael Jackson at one point owned all the Beatles music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
It's definitely more complex than we're saying.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Yeah. But after Michael Jackson died, I remember all of a sudden Apple could have the Beatles on iTunes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
iTunes. We sound so old. I guarantee you there are people who don't know what that is.
Oh, for sure. No question. Wow.
This podcast hit number one on iTunes.
Yeah. That is so crazy. I actually recently, I may have said this on this podcast before, but I was having a conversation with two of my friends who are both 27. And I'm 31, Corey is 34, and we were talking about TRL. And they were both like, what's TRL? And I was like, all right, I'm going to walk into the ocean.
Like, even if you weren't a fan of TRL, it was such a staple of pop culture for the time being.
A cornerstone of our society.
Yeah.
And they
we
didn't
had
know
like much music up here.
Oh, you poor Canadian bastard. Yeah. Well, anyway.
I don't get to pick where I was born, Gab.
I know. I'm sorry. I do have friends who are Canadian who also are like, I don't know what TRL is, but that's because, you know, Canada.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that. I would have assumed it just aired in Canada as well.
Like we had MTV, but anytime you wanted, obviously, cable-based television channels. Like I remember we didn't get Teletoon and like Cartoon Network and stuff till I was about like 13.
What's Teletoon?
Oh, sorry. That's the Canadian one. Teletoon was essentially the equivalent of Cartoon Network. Like we had, we didn't have Disney Channel. We had Family Channel. It's kind of like right now. So for present day listeners, we don't have HBO. What the heck is it called? Max. We don't have Max. Though the HBO streaming content is released through a streaming service up here called Crave.
Interesting.
Huh. Which was developed by Bell.
I don't want to move to Canada is what I'm hearing.
Well, I mean, we have international healthcare, so give and take.
Yeah. You know, my arm has been broken for many months, but I do get to watch The Sopranos whenever I want. So
I own it. Physical media supreme.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
No. All right. Moving on to the mice.
I have a shelf right here.
Okay. So I guess Gab wants me to move on to the taglines.
Oh, God. Do I?
Well, first, I'll give you the two terrible ones that were clearly for like, here's the release of the movie on VHS or whatever. New in the classic Walt Disney tradition.
Okay.
That's it. That's, I'm getting the worst ones out of the way.
That's really interesting given the timeline of the release for this being pre-Disney Renaissance and kind of like the end of the Dark Ages.
I do think that this is one of those taglines that came out for the video release or something like that, that is just like it gets thrown on IMDb.
Do a video re-release too. So this could have been a re-release in the 90s with that tagline.
There's been multiple releases of this movie, sometimes with two different titles.
Yeah.
What is it they called the other time? Basil of Baker Street.
Yeah. Well, that's the name of the book.
Yeah. The second tagline, which we'll get out of the way quickly, all new, all fun.
I had that VHS tape.
Yeah.
I'd like to just say that a significant portion of this movie was not fun.
There was some unfun in the movie. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So now we'll get to the ones that feel more like they're about this movie. Can he bring the dirty rat to justice?
Okay.
London's crime-fighting ace on his most baffling case. It rhymes. I like a rhyme.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm surprised there wasn't one like, this house has more than one mouse.
Yeah, I feel like there was room for something like that, but maybe, you know, 1986, maybe they're not really known as the House of Mouse at that time yet.
I mean, wasn't it because of a show? Like there was the Mickey Mouse, or I don't know, the one where they had all of the characters in the same place. Wasn't it called the House
Mickey
of Mouse
Clubhouse?
No, that's like the one for toddlers. My son watches that one.
Yeah, yeah.
There was one in like the late 90s. Yeah, so maybe not. I don't
this
know.
This was the adult one.
This is Disney.
This is where Goofy was doing lines off of Donald.
Yeah. We find out what happened to Goofy's wife.
Oh boy. Okay, interesting. Yeah, none of those are really all that captivating to me, but that's fine.
Not the best.
Nothing detective-y, like no super sleuth or whatever.
Yeah,
not
really.
Yeah.
Which maybe he could have worked in a sequel with a super sloth. Who's a super sleuth?
Okay.
I could just see Basil waiting for him to tell him what he saw. Like,
I do feel like this was right for a sequel, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
All right. So I guess to dive into a little bit more about what it's about. Olivia, the most British name of all time, Olivia Flaversham. Her father is kidnapped and she goes to Basil and his new assistant, brand new assistant Dawson, for help solving the case, which will eventually connect to his version of Moriarty, which is Radigan, who has a plan to use her father to create a doppelganger, obviously spoilers, of the Queen of Mouse England. The Mouse Queen
Mouse
of Mouse England.
Mousedom.
Yes, he's going to be the new king of all mousedom. And Radigan will install her as a literal puppet leader. And I think that's about it. And obviously Basil has to stop him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do we dive into our opinions?
I can't wait.
In this critic's opinion.
You know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Well, I have a right to my opinion, and my opinion is you have no right to your opinion.
Kyle, I feel like Gab has something to say.
I know.
I'm not sure if it's going to be positive or negative. So I think
she hated this. That's my prediction.
Here's what I'm going to say. This is the first and most important thing that popped into my head throughout this entire watch, and it was, this is so dark. Like,
yeah, it is.
I kind of appreciate the darkness.
Why is it so
awesome?
There's misery everywhere.
It's the 1800s England. It was a gross place.
But it's Disney. Yeah.
We could have had Basil versus Jack the Ripper.
This is why I love this movie in terms of that, because as somebody who's like, my wife and I, we bonded over our love of the Disney catalog. And this era, I mean, I wouldn't have picked something else from this era because there's a lot of bad. But this is Disney with the soft edges have not been worn off by time. There's like a burlesque sequence at a bar.
Yes. So what Disney movies would you sort of put in the same category as this one?
In terms of in quality or in terms of like edge?
Tone?
In terms of edge.
Well, it's an interesting period because the 80s in general, like I took a class on this. So it's like you learn so much about the... No, I would not at all. You just learn from other people. But post Walt Disney's death in 1964, 63, the last film he worked on was The Jungle Book. Like historically speaking, Disney's biggest success was adaptation. We talked about their use of Peter Pan and a lot of those other things. Jungle Book being a prime example. Because it was a book he'd wanted to do for a long time. But you get the period post Walt Disney where Ron had taken over and they didn't really know what to do with Disney at the time. They actually had moved the animation studio off the main lot. They were working somewhere else. It was kind of like, we've moved on to terrible live action movies at this point in the 80s, right? You have, I would say in a category of like post Disney films, I would put this with like Robin Hood and the Rescuers. Like Black Cauldron is terrible.
That's the movie I thought of when I think of this because
yeah, like
I had never seen either one before this, but those two are paired in my mind as like the not really successful ugly stepchildren of the 80s for Disney.
Yeah. Well, and also one of the biggest changes in animation at the time was specifically around 101 Dalmatians, Sword in the Stone, and Jungle Book. I pulled up the list. Those are not offhand. I'm so tired. Sorry.
Offhand off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head. Off the top rope. But that's when they started like Xeroxing or photocopying drawings. So there's a lot of stuff reused in that time frame. And what I like about The Great Mouse Detective is because of the setting, nothing could be reused. You watch Robin Hood, Jungle Book, Sword in the Stone. A lot of that is really recycled. Christopher Robin, Arthur, and Mowgli. It's the same character model. And so there are frames.
I don't understand.
Like, so in terms of animation, the way that it was done in this era was you would have a guy animate on, like, picture like a big ass flip book. Like, that's how you would animate it. And then each individual frame was painted on a, like, a pane of glass. And so you would cycle through, and then somebody would transfer the drawings, like trace it into all these frames. And so you need, for animation, you need 12 frames a second. So just however, and that's the animation process at the time. To save time at this time, like during this era, they would reuse drawings of, like, so Mowgli, Christopher Robin, Arthur, and there's somebody else. Who did
if
I
miss? If you're looking
somebody?
At just like the stick figure version, not the stick figure, but the uncolored version where it's just the shapes, the outlines.
It's all the same.
The outline of them are the same.
Or they reused stuff.
Oh, I understand. So Christopher Robin and Mowgli are like the same boy. I thought you meant that Mowgli, it was like the same drawing.
No, the whole time. Yeah.
I was like, well, I would hope so. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
I understand.
And so there's a lot of this era in Disney's animation where the history is just lost. Little John from the Robin Hood film is Baloo from Jungle Book. So a lot of Baloo's animation and cells, which being one individual frame, are gone because they literally were colored over.
Wow, that's so sad. But that makes sense, though, because you can totally see it when you look at those characters. Like, it's the same. So I guess then if you're looking at, let's say, maybe a sequence of Baloo moving his arm, you might have that same sequence in the Jungle Book.
Yeah,
I
there's
mean,
a dancing sequence.
Whatever.
It's exactly the same. The way he dances with King Louie is the same when they sing the when Robin Hood wins the golden arrow. It's the same dance.
That's a farce.
Yeah, like this
it's
one.
It's cheap. They had to make
it. It was cheaper. Oh, yeah. So
it's the same reason why if you're watching an old Scooby-Doo from like the 80s, you're like, there's one thing that clearly looks different from the background. I wonder if that's the thing that they'll find something behind.
Yeah. Well, and this film has this too. In terms of getting back to Great Mouse Detective, what this has that I think it's ironic that I'm here for this film. And because we talked about stuff with The Mask of Zorro, and this was a first time revelation I had last night. This has all the tropes of a Bond film.
Oh yeah,
I guess you've got Fidget, who's got the like physical thing, and he's got the weird voice. He's like, shoes, uniforms, gears, girl. Like, you've got the side henchman. You've got the quite literally mustache twirling villain. You've got the death trap at the very end. And you've got, like, I mean, there's more music.
Now I
want
to hear Baz go, do you really expect me to talk, Rannigan?
Yeah, exactly.
I've never seen a single Bond film, but I was like, yes, Kyle, yes, exactly.
You've not a single, okay, I'm coming on next for a James Bond
movie. My wife has never seen any James Bond either. And the first one I wanted to show her was, I was like, Die Another Day. It's like the worst James Bond movie, but it's also
no, it's not. There
favorite.
Are, the Roger Moore era is so bad. The 70s Roger Moore films are terrible.
But I showed it to Giselle, and halfway through she was asleep, and I was like, well, I'm finishing this bad boy. I was like, yeah.
I mean, Halle Berry as a Bond girl, that's it. You don't have to say anything else.
That Madonna song is great, too.
Right?
Yeah.
Best opening credits of a Bond movie. Just saying.
Yeah.
Get your Adele's and your Billie Eilish. Get them out of you.
Get him out.
I'm trying to think who did the one after that. It was the White Stripe. No, it was just Jack White and Alicia Keys. They did another Way to Die.
My brother refuses to call her Billie Eilish. She goes, Billie Eilish.
She's won two Oscars already.
Yeah.
Insane.
I'm probably the only person who cares about the Oscars, but I was so fucking mad that one, if a song from Barbie was going to win that Oscar, it should not have been that one. It was either Dance the Night Away or I'm Just Ken. And I'm the only one still upset about that.
We're going to air out. So no, it's Boy and the Heron. I'm sorry. I saw all of those movies. It is Boy and the Heron should not have won animated Oscar. It should have been Across the Spider-Verse.
I get Across the Spider-Verse not winning because it's the only movie of like
that did anything new.
no, it doesn't have an actual ending. It's like, and come back next week.
All right. You like? Do you like Star Wars, Dylan?
I mean, yeah, I like Star Wars. Ooh. Which Star Wars?
Did Empire Strikes Back, definitively the best Star Wars film of all time, have an ending?
Of course it has an ending, yes.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does. It ends on the down note.
Okay, what's the difference with Across the Spider-Verse? How does it end? On a down note.
On a down note, baby.
And it's more cliffhangery than... No. Empire Strikes Back ends in a way that it's like, we will have another story to wrap this up. Across the Spider-Verse ends in like mid-scene where it's like, and where's Act 3?
It's exactly the same. One person is trapped and taken away from his loved ones, and the other person is healed and ready to go on to the next adventure. Gwen Stacy is Luke Skywalker, and Miles is Han Solo.
Who's Princess Leia, then?
Obviously, it's Peter B. Parker.
Oh my god, I love Peter B. Parker's.
I was him for Halloween this year.
Who doesn't love
Peter? Was your son Spider-Man?
He was Spider-Man, and Melody was, I'll send you a picture, was Spider-Gwen.
That is so cute. I love that. I can't wait to do fucking family Halloween costumes. I'm going to crush that shit.
We're doing a terrible job of talking about the Great Master Tech.
Okay,
listen, it's dark. Let me go back to what I was going to say. Yeah. It was dark, and there was very little, like, Disney magic. And I don't mean that literally. I mean in terms of, like, there was not a whole lot of, like, joy and love. It was kind of just like... literally watching a Sherlock Holmes or something where there's like a happy ending, I guess, like it ends well, but there wasn't like a lot of happy magic, joy, little children feel warm and fuzziness.
I mean, you make it sound like this is Requiem for a Dream or American History X. Like, it's not that dark.
I couldn't believe when the Nazis showed up. I was like, you're here 50 years too early.
Yeah, when Radican curb stomps that henchman. Whoa.
Yeah, I mean, the guts were everywhere. It just, to me, it was like, it didn't feel like a Disney movie. Like, you know those movies from when you were a kid that were, like, animated, but they were, like, Disney knockoffs? I can't think of any off the top of my head, but, like...
Well, yeah, there was Thumbelina.
Yes.
And Swan Princess.
Yep.
I know exactly. I think that's a completely fair criticism. My main experience with this film was on one of those clamshell VHS tapes, and I watched it every single day. I was at a timeshare in Florida. I think I was 5.
Oh, but okay. How about it's last week?
Yeah. No, I'm not going to Florida anytime soon. Get your politics out of my movies to watch before you die. but in terms, like, it's, I think that's a fair representation of what the film is, Gab. It's impossible to remove, like, we're all relatively the same age, but we grew up through the greatest animation era, arguably, in film history, right? From Little Mermaid to Tarzan for most people. Some people throw Dinosaur in there. But in terms of the animated Broadway musical, right? Like, you can argue quality, which in terms of what is the best and what's not in terms of favorites, but that really did set the standard. And I would argue that's been Disney's biggest downfall since 99, is they've been stuck in that expectation. When I watched this now, I was like, it feels as if Don Bluth snuck into Disney, made a movie, and then actually made two movies. He made Black Cauldron and made this and then just left. Like, that's the American Tale, Anastasia. What else did he want?
I would love to see Disney do something time. Like this now, because
this
is not what you expect from them. And I think people are a little tired of getting exactly what they expect to get.
Like Frozen. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, it's really true. It's, if you look at everything outside of, there was Moana, Raya, Frozen, Encanto, Wish, obviously Frozen, Tank, like it all fits into that fairy tale. And what I like about this film is it being an action adventure with the tropes of a Bond film. Like, it's impossible for me to remove that this was the thing that I subconsciously put an interest in Sherlock Holmes for me. I didn't read the books until about 6 years later doesn't matter. Yeah, grade 6 or 7, I read The Hound of Baskervilles. And this having all of those archetypes in it, and this does something that no version of Sherlock Holmes has ever done, which is it's an origin story up until Sherlock in 2010. You never get to meet the characters. actually meeting each other. It's like, yeah, we've been doing like the Scarlet Letter, which I believe is the, not the Scarlet Letter.
The Scarlet Pumpernickel.
Study in Scarlet. Study in Scarlet being the first Sherlock Holmes. Yeah. Short story. It's not really an origin story. Like I don't know if you two have ever played the game Villainous, which it's a phenomenal board game. Radigan was one of the very first characters to be in it. And that's the iconography of the villain.
Dylan, I'm sorry, Kyle. I'm going to interrupt you for a second.
No, go right ahead.
Dylan, we definitely both looked this up at the same time. And you said
the Scarlet Pumpernickel is a Daffy Duck. That's Daffy Duck, yeah.
The Scarlet Pimpernel is what you're thinking of.
So sorry, Kyle.
No, that's
okay.
That was
embarrassing for you. Anyway, please continue.
And we also talked about the Disney Renaissance period, where it was more often than not you had celebrities playing the roles. And that's become, for me especially, annoying, because you never lose the actor in their recognizable voice, where if you weren't a B-movie serial fan, you have no, like, most people would, I think, in our generation know Vincent Price as the guy who narrates Thriller.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's our one of the biggest, most successful singles of all time.
Yeah.
But when I watched this movie, I've looked up these guys, like, outside of Vincent Price, because he was in a lot of other things. But like Barry Ingram, who plays Basil, and then Val, I'm going to assume it's Bitten.
Val Bonin or Bedden? Yeah.
Yeah. As Dawson, I cannot remove them from their characters, which is not something we get anymore. And the fact that you talked about the edges on it, I like that this film has those, like, it's intense. It's got thrills. The spectacle of it being, it does what Rescuers, both of them, I would argue, don't do, which is it actually shows you the size of these creatures in a crowded London.
Yeah.
Like, you can't animate humans everywhere, because that would have been a nightmare at the time.
Yeah. I did appreciate that the mice were living in, like, what we would know as the regular world. And it wasn't like this fantasy world where mice are people.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think happens a lot.
Well, and the two iconic human people in this, I'm assuming Dylan has for trivia.
What, the Sherlock Holmes and Watson?
Oh, cameos? Yeah, and Watson, that they're in there. Yeah, I noticed that too.
I do love that he lives underneath their house. Yeah. Oh my God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's a cool
thing. I thought that was great. So I think outside of that, like, you know, I definitely said out loud, oh, we got a musical number. And then I definitely said out loud, oh, we got a second musical number. But I guess that's par for the course in something like this. It did make me feel a little grateful that I did not grow up where I was between the ages of, like, you know, 4 and 7 in the late 80s, because it feels like there would be some trauma that would probably need to be unpacked to this day if that were the case.
There's a lot of shots that would be scary of, like, Fidget's face coming directly at screen, or like Radigan getting super pissed, and you're like, oh, like, if I was like 4 years old, yeah, I'd remember that.
I think it's certainly a true thing. I couldn't remember particularly what scared me. I don't know if Fidget did. I know Radigan did when he goes all beast mode near the end, but it's funny that, like, we're here, because obviously I'm assuming you've had Brian and or James on, but Alan Burnett famously said, like, kids need a few healthy scares here and there. And like, if you're going to get them in something like this, as opposed to, like, my first horror movie I saw at 4 was The Leprechaun, starring Jennifer Aniston. And I was afraid of basements till I was like 15.
Yeah, understandable.
Still gets PTSD every St. Patrick's Day.
Dylan, we watched some kind of, like, weird like parody of Leprechaun.
No, was it didn't. Leprechaun in the Hood?
I think we're thinking of Leprechaun Back to the Hood, where a guy gets stabbed to death with a bong, and it's one of my favorite horror movie kills.
But
ever.
We watched that as kids together, me, you, and Zach.
And I loved it then. And I have it on DVD now.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? Do me a favor. Keep that shit to yourself.
Gab, you can right now, all 7 Leprechaun movies, you can probably get it for like $2.
All 7 Leprechaun.
Actually, they pay
back
you
to
watch them.
Yeah.
Oh,
there's
my
also
God.
Like Leprechaun in Space. Like, they did everything that a horror franchise could do. They
so
Mark
Sharknado,
Davis was getting those checks.
Yeah. Sharknado came after, I understand.
Oh, yeah. Asylum was not a studio until much later.
They already did a gritty reboot of Leprechaun. That's how long this series has been around.
It's just called Lep.
I think it's, I'm trying to remember if it is called Leprechaun, because that feels even like it's too, we can't call it that, but it, yeah, it's obviously not good, because the fun part about those movies is the shit-talking Leprechaun.
Yeah.
He bites off somebody's nose in the first one. Like, jumps at them and goes,
such a bad job of talking about the Great Mouse Detective. Can we go back to the two musical numbers? Because Vincent Price as Rattigan is such a campy bitch, and I love it.
Yeah, I love it.
Like, the song... Okay, so the first song, Oh Rattigan, I've been singing in my head, Oh Rattigan, Oh Rattigan, for like 2 or 3 days.
Oh, well,
do you know why?
No, I don't know enough of the words. I just know that chorus.
So it's because one of the writers is created arguably one of the most iconic musical scores of all time.
Who? What?
It's Henry Mancini, writer of the Pink Panther theme.
Okay.
Which is like, these songs I know off by heart. But the actual main, like, Great Mouse Detective theme, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It's good. I also like the line in that song, worse than the widowers and orphans you drowned, you're the best of the worst around. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It was dark as hell.
Like, little Sally's going to have to be like, what's an orphan? What's a widow?
It's you, bitch.
Yeah. That shit is crazy.
And the second song is even better, because this is the time that he has them trapped. And he has
the third song.
Yeah, Dill, the second song, the hooker sings.
I'm getting rid of the mouse burlesque song. I didn't really give a shit about that. I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's so raunchy.
The hooker.
I was like, I'm not here for the horny mice. Once you get to that portion, though, where it is him doing the song where they're in the death trap, and it's like, once this song ends, you'll die. I'm like, this campy little lad. It was like, yes, you're going to die, but you're going to die after I sing So Long Farewell. Like, it's been so nice. Like, I'm like, oh my God, who has the time? He's like, yes, we could kill him now, but I do have to record this song first to let him know he's going to die.
We need to have a musical number.
Did either of you watch Fleabag?
No. I did not.
No. Okay. I'm trying to think. So Andrew Scott was also in Sherlock, who played Moriarty. This wouldn't make any sense, but I kept thinking during the second musical number, if they did a live action version of this, like with people, not with mice, I would need him to be Rattigan, because it feels exactly like he played Moriarty in the Benedict Cumberbatch Sherlock show. And it feels like he just watched Great Mouse Detective as his quote unquote research.
I don't even know. He's like the most flamboyant version of Rattigan. He's so barrel chested.
No, I know. But yeah. I just meant in terms of like tone and performance.
Yes.
Because the Moriarty in Sherlock is so flamboyant.
I just want to say, I loved that character. I love Vincent Price. I thought it was wonderful. And I think my favorite part of this movie is the fact that they don't want to acknowledge that he's a rat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that.
When they don't actually tell you that rats are awful, but clearly in a world of like all mice and the two random like lizards that are his hench people.
Yeah.
And they're like, and also this is the thing that I didn't realize how much I missed this, because this isn't a ton of earlier Disney movies when characters get drunk.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just wasted. True. Yep. They're just wasted. Just also, the two lizards looked familiar to me. Like, those characters are also in other Disney movies.
Oh, for sure. Went on to be the star of the Geico commercials.
Right. No, but isn't there, like, a lizard like that in Robin Hood also?
Well, there's Kaa, not Kaa. No, it's Kaa. No. The heck is... No, it's Kaa. Because which one is the Jungle Book snake? My brain just...
I think Kaa is the Jungle Book.
I'm not sure, but I love hearing you just say Kaa.
No, it's his.
Yeah, K-A-A, Kaa. Yeah. I'm looking it up right now. It's the name of the snake.
Yeah, his name's Carl, Book, Kyle. Spit it out.
That'll make no sense to anybody. And then it's Hiss is in the jungle. In Robin Hood, there's Hiss. And they're both played by the same person.
Yes, yeah, and he's got the crazy eyes. Yes.
No, Kaa has the crazy eyes. Hiss is just in love with Prince John.
I do not know how to tell you this in a more polite way, but I am Googling it right now and it is backwards. Hiss has the crazy eyes and he is in Robin Hood, and Kaa is regular, and he's in the Jungle Book.
I'm just having flashbacks.
They both have crazy eyes. Okay. They both have crazy eyes.
With all the Boston characters trying to say Carl Hanratty. You both sound like you're just saying Carl with a Boston accent.
No, it's Hiss is in the Jungle Book.
Dylan, on a separate note, can I tell you how fucking horrendous the past few months have been for me? Because no matter what, at least 5 times a day, Corey refers to something, refers to someone, or just says out loud, apropos of nothing, Carl Hanratty. Over and over and over and over. He'll be like, so, you know, I was thinking tomorrow, maybe we should go to that that Carl Hanratty. And I'm like, stop it.
Knock, knock. It. Go fuck yourself.
Knock, knock.
Can we talk about, we have to find a way to keep this train on the fucking tracks,
okay.
People.
Okay, okay.
The best character in this movie besides Rattigan.
I want to say it.
Oh, let's see. Okay, go ahead. Let's see if we agree.
Okay, should we say it at the same time? You
no,
ready?
Because that never works out. Whenever you count down on Zoom, we don't say it at the same time. Fine.
Okay, okay. 3, Toby.
Midget. It is Midget. Midget going, I got the kid. I got the girl. I got the animal. Like,
why did he have to have a peg leg? Why did he have to be handicapped?
Because he needed a unique character trait.
First of all, you're not going to forget about the bat who can't fly with a fucking peg leg. And also,
he can fly, I think, before he gets chewed.
He cannot fly because Basil says before that he goes, did he have a crippled wing or something like that?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite scenes of the movie where he's getting Toby's like, smell the hat, smell that. And he's like, he's just describing physical attributes. And Toby's like, what? It's like, oh, he's a peg leg bat with a crippled wing. And the Toby's like, oh, I see.
And he needs the peg leg. So Basil, when you're looking at footprints, if it's just regular footprints, he can't specifically be like, that's from Fidget.
Yeah, and I think the mystery in this is it's child appropriate, right? Like, you get the pseudoscience scene. Like, it's got all the hallmarks of Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, and we don't see anybody die. Like, there's no direct death. There's indirect death. Children can handle death if they don't see it happen.
You see the mouse get swallowed.
I'll tell you what. Yeah, they weren't fucking worried about us seeing death because they made us watch the fucking Fox and the Hound. Bambi.
Do you see mom get shot? It's gunshot, and then she's dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we didn't see Mufasa getting trampled by wildebeest.
True.
You guys haven't seen that deleted scene? They had James Earl Jones record a bunch of, ow, oh, ow, oh.
I would pay so much money for that.
I don't need that trauma. The other day, Corey said to me, you know, Simba was really fucking pumped to become the king, but do you think he realized his father had to die for that to happen?
Well, and let's not talk about the fact that he married his sister.
He married his sister.
You know how lion prides work, right? There's one dude.
Yikes. I guess so.
Turns out all lions are incestuous.
Yeah.
Also, wait, guys, Google this if you haven't. Listener, Google this if you haven't. Lions can go bald, and it's the saddest thing you'll ever fucking see. It's pathetic looking. Like, imagine being the king of the jungle and having a receding fucking hairline. As a human, I feel bad about it. Being the king of the jungle, it's a nightmare.
You know what? They look like hockey players who just haven't given up yet because they've clearly got the chin beard.
Yeah, and they're like the enforcer out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so sad. I think the thing that Corey is most proud of in his life is that he hasn't lost his hair. It's not going anywhere.
Well, typically it's like the genetics of your mother's father.
Yeah.
Typically.
I think he's okay.
What did you think of the clock tower sequence? Because I think that's the best sequence in the film. Like, the conclusion.
I thought to myself, this would scare me as a child.
Oh, Rattigan sprinting on the gears is terrible. Like, as an adult, I was like, ooh, fuck that guy. Like, I was like, I don't want to see this dude. And then what's interesting is there's no Foley sound for like him scratching his claws into Basil or anything, but it's just these musical cues that it's like Basil is injured and you can tell he's hurt.
No, it's the dialogue on Basil getting hit that for me was the most unsettling, because you're right, Dylan, you don't hear it. There's one in particular, like one of his like, and I rewound it because it's disgusting. Like, he's clearly got internal bleeding. Things are going poorly for this mouse.
Have I told you the story of when I stepped on the rat recently?
No.
This is New York. What, did it have pizza?
We were close to a restaurant. It did not have pizza, but it was clearly looking for its pizza.
Were there four baby turtles?
No, no four baby turtles, unfortunately. I know.
Was it handing out flyers about a comedy show tonight?
Oh, that was the last one. I was like, there's a third. What's the third?
No, that's no. What you,
every New York City corner has somebody going like, free comedy show. You like comedy? Do you like comedy?
Well, Dylan, that actually only happens in Times Square. But
that's true.
I was walking from my friend's apartment to the train, and she lives next door to a restaurant, and there were like, this happened over the summer. So I was wearing slides. I had my bare ass feet in a pair of slides, and I'm looking at the restaurant because there's outdoor seating now. So I'm looking, and this rat ran across the sidewalk, and I didn't see it until the last second, and it was too late. My foot was going down, and then I stepped on the rat, and I screamed, and the rat screamed. It was so bad. I lifted my foot up. It ran into like an alleyway or something like that, and I think about this multiple times a week, like if I killed that rat and if it died a slow, painful death. But like it in broad daylight ran across the sidewalk underneath my foot.
I mean, they can squeeze into stuff like stupid small, so probably not. I'm more concerned it wasn't your bare foot, right? It was the slide.
It was the slide.
Okay.
No guarantee if my foot didn't come off the shoe a little bit and hit the rat. I'm unclear, but for all intents and purposes, and what my therapist has told me multiple times is, it was the slide.
I heard this rat tell this same story on a podcast yesterday.
Oh God! All right, he's okay then.
He lived. Yeah, don't worry.
Okay, thank you.
It was the Joe Radigan experience.
Humans to meet before you die.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rats to step on before they die.
Now wait, Kyle and I have both done our fidget impression. Gab, can you give me your best fidget?
I gotta get the me. I got the girl. I got the costumes.
Okay.
Uniform.
You know what line he has also that I love? It's Olivia steps on his foot and he goes, "Ow, my foot, my only foot." It's the pointing out like of my says. Only foot.
He goes, "I'm too young to die."
Yeah, Fidget's by far the best character in this movie.
Yeah,
me.
I like Toby.
Toby's adorable, and I like that, like, they have their different classifications of troops because Toby and the cat are clearly the heavies for Radigan and Basil, and they're like, we got to get those two out of the way together. And the cat, like, I don't know if the cat's supposed to die either, but the cat's like, I've cleared this fence.
Oh, that
and
cat
I'm away
is
from Toby.
So dead.
Killed by corgis? Like,
that's what I was thinking. As that happened, I couldn't remember if we saw corgis or not.
You don't. You just see the fence that says, like, the royal dogs or whatever. But, like, the queen doesn't have Rottweilers.
Right.
True. Okay, so I have to bring this up because this made me laugh out loud while watching this. So Nalina was reading a book or whatever while I was watching this last night. And she's like, you know what this movie doesn't consider? I'm like, what? She's like, mice live for, like, 2 years. So the queen's probably been queen for, like, a year of human time. But it's her, like, diamond jubilee because she's so old.
That is funny.
You gotta think, like, every week they're having a massive celebration. Like,
exactly.
The time is just, like, if you think about it, Radigan and Basil have had a rivalry for, like, 3 days.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So here's my question. I've talked about is this a shared universe with the Rescuers?
I haven't seen the Rescuers, but in my head, they're all the same.
I've never seen the Rescuers, so I have no idea. I also have not seen the Rescuers Down Under. I will say, my wife had this to say. Fuck these rats, fuck mice, and fuck Mickey. All rats are disgusting. And she wanted to make sure that I said that on this podcast. I guess that the rats know.
Well, that's,
I mean,
that's
actual mice. Fair. I hate them. That's fair.
I think they're cute. I actually don't mind the rats.
Except the one you stepped on.
No. I feel terrible about that. I hope he's okay. I hope he's fathering children and living a happy life. I just feel like the thing that really bothers me about rats, and I live in New York City, so I feel like I am the authority on this. The male rats have enormous testicles, and it makes me very uncomfortable. They're so big. Have you ever seen the size of their balls compared to the rest of their body is obscene.
Is it like the dog in Van Wilder?
I've never seen that, but I'm going to find
Google dog in Van Wilder. Don't Google what they do with the dog, but just Google dog in Van Wilder.
You better not be sending us either a photo of rat testes. I'm good.
Oh, I am.
Fantastic. That's disabled, that's the cherry this day
chat.
Needs.
What?
So yeah, do you guys think Radican is just dragging a huge set of balls around?
Yeah. He wears baggy clothes. It's entirely possible.
How Let me in the share world my screen.
Does a rat get a PhD?
Let me share my screen.
Well, I mean, so it's a doctorate in anything, yeah. Right? I'm assuming it's engineering.
Although
given
he's not
that
Dr. Radican, but he's a professor. How did he become a professor? How did he get his master's degree?
Yeah, is that what it is? Okay, yeah. So I'm assuming it's engineering, given the contraption of that death trap at the very end.
I guess.
Which one would
be
the worst if you're a mouse? Let's talk about that. So there's the gun. So a bullet. You have a bullet-sized hole. There's the anvil, which is very Acme. I thought that one was a little on the nose. There's the axe. Is that all of them?
There's an
and the arrow.
And they're on a mousetrap.
And they're on a mousetrap. I feel like if the mousetrap goes off first, it breaks your neck and you don't feel anything else. So, like, what was the point?
All of them are fairly quick, I would think. Maybe not the axe. Maybe the axe.
But the mousetrap is the fastest. It's you're
if an anvil drops on them, they're not surviving. That's instantaneous, you know?
No, I don't know.
How did he hang that anvil up?
He went beast mode, which is terrifying. Like, I think we're under, like, of Disney villains, Radigan is in the top five of scary ones. Like, we love the ones from the 90s. They're not really scary. Like, Scar's a Nazi, but, I mean, for all intents and purposes, he's not scary. He loses
back to a Notre Dame guy is scary.
Oh, Lord Frollo? Yeah,
he's like, I want to send you to hell.
But he's just a pervert. That's
women.
What's scary about him. He's a pervert.
Yeah,
there are other people who are scary for sure. I feel
who's
like
scarier. That's the question.
I saw a woman on the street today who looked exactly like the witch from Snow White.
Oh, Maleficent. She's not. Oh, the witch from Snow White. Sorry.
With the apple. Yeah.
Oh, why?
But enormous, right? Biggest balls you've ever seen. And that's proportionate.
Saw the mouse testicle thing. Yeah.
It did. Let's proportion. How do I put this away?
I don't know. It's just staring me in the face now.
Hi, chat. Yeah. All right, here we go. But I think that's what's interesting in terms of like looking at it. I mean, I'm looking at this also from like the Sherlock Holmes perspective, and I don't know like what your exposure is to that IP in general, but it never ends in physical altercations. That's kind of the point, right? Like they're both intellectuals. So I think that's what makes Radigan an interesting villain. And like one thing we haven't talked about, and I'm kind of happy we haven't, is Gab, last time we talked about the length of the film. This is an hour and 10 minutes. And I'm really hoping it didn't feel long.
No.
But in terms of Radigan, and it's an element I like the script phase for this is we're going to not talk about him being a rat the whole time. And then you see why at the end with that like ferociousness at the very end where it's like, no, he goes full animalistic and just beats the shit out of Basil, who's just purely an intellectual, right? Like he's not doing the brass knuckle brawling like Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Right, where he can see everything in slow motion.
That was a cool thing for the Sherlock Holmes character, though, that he's like, disabled, break the third rib down on the right side, and it's like, what? Okay.
Yeah, I like those films. They work
That's
as
not
big
how intelligence works, yeah.
No, but in theory, if you've studied anything enough, like, if you've studied, like, there's the chess masters, you know what somebody is going to do, because it's strategy-based. With the human body, obviously Gab would be the expert in terms of like what people are capable of. But in terms of like, I have my black belt in karate and there's only so many things you can do to attack somebody within reason, right?
Yeah. I'm not an expert on like combat by any means.
Yeah, you're more of an expert if you're a black belt, you're more of an expert than she is.
It's been
a while. I will say this. There is a level of muscle memory that you gain from doing these movements over and over and over where you don't have to think about what you're doing and you are clear-headed enough to think about what your next move is.
Yeah,
so
that's what I meant.
You can operate on autopilot and be like there are certain things in CrossFit that I am good enough at that I can do and think to myself, what do I want to eat for lunch when I get home? And then there are things where I'm like, I have to have my full concentration.
Yeah,
but I could definitely have like an inner monologue and think about what my next move is while I'm doing it. For sure.
You're not picking up a dumbbell and being like, bend arm.
Right. Right.
Right. It's built into habit.
Yeah.
So I think, and yeah, I don't know. I have a feeling I know where this is going, but regardless of that, I enjoyed the experience of watching it again, because as you mentioned, like, we don't get this. Like, I haven't shown my kids this yet. And one thing Nalina pointed out was at when they have the two acts of kind of just the buffoons at the bar near the end, they're just throwing knives and axes. Like, this isn't just tomatoes because you suck. This is, I'm trying to impale you because you're so bad.
Yeah. It was a lot. I was like, oh my God. Because I wondered if you had showed this to your kids, or like if at today's, you know, in today's day and age, if that's something that like you and your wife think like maybe you need to wait a little while, or if it's like, oh, it's a kid's movie, who cares? Like, where you stand as modern parents on something like this.
So the first thing that popped up to me, and there's a lot of things where it's, I don't think like canceling old stuff just because it doesn't hold up to more progressive thoughts, I think is a little problematic. Not, again, not wanting to get political, but in terms of like just being able to have those conversations, like why this looks the way it does. Like, I'm never going to show them Song of the South, partially because that's a terrible movie.
Stop it.
But honestly, I don't know if this, so we discussed like my background before the podcast. My dad's from Hong Kong. And when Basil shows up in his disguise at the very beginning.
Yeah. Very stereotypically disguised.
Yeah.
He's a big Chinese mouse. And I went, oh, I forgot about this. Like, he's got an actual food. Like, he's not doing an accent. Thank God.
Yeah.
Right.
It was like three more seconds and that would have happened. But yeah.
Oh, if this movie was probably 4 years earlier, it guaranteed he would have. I'm not going to do it. But I think we all know what he would have sounded like. Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Exactly. Right. And so I don't know. Like, I think similar to what we talked about earlier, like, I'm the last thing I'm going to do is tell people what they should show their kids. A lot of that comes down to maturity. Like, can they handle the conversation after? Like, you brought up Peter Pan. I haven't shown Melody that. Partially, I say it's all because of the representation of Native Americans and Indigenous people. Like, I don't want my 3-year-old, who sings everything he hears, singing What Makes the Red Man Red.
Right.
Because it's not a never. It's just a not right now.
Sure.
Right. And this fortunately only has that, and arguably the objectification of small women mice, because there is the two. This wouldn't pass the what is it, the Belkin test?
Yep.
Right? Wouldn't pass it. Well, no, there's three women. There's the one who is the live-in maid for Basil.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no, four. Four, I guess, if we're including Miss Flanghanger.
And the hookers.
I guess there are multiple hookers. Well, we don't know. They could just be burlesque dancers. Let's not.
Yeah, they're burlesque dancers.
We don't see them.
There's no exchange of money for acts of any kind.
Nobody disappears into a bathroom.
I don't know.
There's no mouse
guys.
Pimps.
There's definitely mouse pimps. That's my guess.
Sure. Radican pimp slaps the fuck out of Basil on those gears. I was like, oh, snap. Like, that was like, you owe me money kind of slap.
Yeah.
And did you look up the trivia? I don't mean to jump, but it's just kind of like their facts to me about the creation of that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We'll get to that.
I feel like it's the most interesting thing, like probably the most interesting thing about the movie, but we'll get to that in our facts briefly.
Okay.
One last thing I want to say about Radican. Radican, when he is doing his performance as the queen, comes out. Oh no, this is once he's talking himself as the queen's consort, says he wants to tax the elderly, the infirm, the little children, who he calls parasites and sponges. And this made me think, can Radican win the Republican nomination?
100%. Yes.
Because honestly, I was like, you know what? Radican's like, we got to get rid of the welfare state. Social Security, that's the next to go. And I'm like, yeah, I could see it. I could see him on the ticket.
100%. And who would be his running mate? That's the question.
Who's that woman that everybody hates from Georgia?
Marjorie Taylor Greene?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking. It would have to be a woman, but it
Mousery
would have to be
Taylor
like,
Greene. It would have to be the.
Mousery Taylor Greene. It would have to be one of those women. No question.
I'm so sorry.
Fidget could be too. Like his Rudy Giuliani type of guy.
Yeah. His fall guy. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only way it makes me almost like Rudy Giuliani again. It's like being right back in 2001.
America's mayor. Little did we know.
Take care of America. 23 years ago, it'll be this September. That's insane.
I know. Yeah. I know. Oh, man. Well, I think that without really getting into much more like spoilers for our verdicts, we could go into the facts now, perhaps?
Okay, let's do it.
I want the truth!
Face the facts, dokes.
Facts have no place with an organized religion.
So we'll start with our ratings. IMDb gives it a 7.1 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes Tomato Meter gives it a 77%, average rating of 7.1 out of 10. There were 20 fresh reviews and 6 rotten. The audience score is 79% with an average score of 3.9 out of 5. The budget of the movie was $14 million. It grossed $38.6 million.
That feels like a lot of money for a cartoon from 1986.
It was decent for the time. It wasn't. There was another movie that was like a far bigger success of the year, but I can't remember what it was for animated movies. The critics' consensus, The Great Mouse Detective may not rank with Disney's classics, but it's an amiable, entertaining picture with some stylishly dark visuals. Roger Ebert gave it 3 stars. What's fun is the carefree way the animators swing through their story, using the freedom of the cartoon form to blend 19th century realism with images that seem borrowed from more recent special effects pictures. Nina Darnton from New York Times, small children may be afraid of some of the bad characters. The Disney Studios' gift for creating really nasty bad guys means that they are scary. But they will love the cute, brave mice and cheer their triumphs. Adults will enjoy the wit and style. Steve Crum from VideoReviewMaster.com, pedestrian Disney cartoon with nice Vincent Price voiceover. And last one, Karen Wiener Campbell from Entertainment Weekly. There's no need for details. You know his methods, Watson. But suffice it to say, the Great Mouse Detective's few tunes are unmemorable, and all the action, aside from the inventive chase sequences, is snoozeworthy.
Wow.
I did not hear you there, Kyle.
Sorry, I was... So the highest grossing animated film of that year, ironically, was a Don Bluth film with An American Tale.
It was another rat movie.
Yes. Tale, T-A-I-L?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, of course.
We got a couple of reviews from Letterboxd. James, maybe definitely the gayest Disney film ever made. Which I feel like the only part that like totally makes that for me is Basil having the picture of Rattigan on his mantle, where he's like,
can we talk about that transition? Because that transition is incredible.
Paint the picture for me, Kyle. I don't remember.
All right. So we're in Basil's room. He's pulled off his yellow face and he's talking to Dawson about Rattigan, right? He's trying to match the bullets. And he points to the picture. And he's like doing the monologue, like the most foul, whatever. So it's the picture, which is clearly like a painted background. It transitions to Rattigan making that face. They then do the song. And as the song ends, he's making the face the painting is making, and it pivots back to the photograph.
That's great.
That is pretty good, actually. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. A plus.
Maggie from Letterboxd said Basil and Rattigan are bitter exes.
Hmm.
Joe said, I'm sorry, the mouse was deployed in Afghanistan? Why? What was he doing there?
That is.
This was a different time. This is like the first time we went to Afghanistan.
These damn forever wars.
You've never had to change that. That's the sad part about it. Like 2010, yeah. Sherlock Martin Freeman went to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Every Dawson went to Afghanistan.
Every Watson and Dawson. Yeah.
And the last one from Letterboxd, Branson Reese. One of the biggest laughs in any Disney movie I've ever seen comes a few minutes into this when we see a small Scottish mouse sobbing alone in the night as she cries out in vain for her abducted, possibly dead father, only for the movie to abruptly transition into rousing, stately horn music as the words Walt Disney Pictures Presents appear in the sky. And that is, she's like, Daddy, Daddy. And that's like,
that was buck fucking wild.
I've lost my dad and I'm all alone.
That was pretty good.
That was good. I was like, what am I about to watch?
The movie's directed by Ron Clements, Bernie Madison, David Michener, and John Musker, who also directed Moana, Hercules, Aladdin, and The Little Mermaid.
What?
Yeah.
Princess and the Frog. Did you skip Princess and the Frog?
I didn't say, I can only pick so many things, Kyle.
I just don't understand. Do these people like? How much money are you spending that you're still going? You can't just retire on your
They're not paid very well.
Animation directors are not making as much as you think they are. Yeah,
yeah. The animation departments of Hollywood are in like their own corners. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Like a Hollywood screenwriter versus animation screenwriter, the pay is like 1% the same. It's insane.
Well, and I mean, I know the Into the Spider-Verse people are essentially that, like, the Marvel animation studio is the new Triangle Waist Shirt Factory. So
yeah. I remember that same story coming out when it was the movie Sausage Party was being made, that it was like, and we just had to work these animators to death, but we made the movie for only $20 million or something.
Yeah, and it was horrible.
Back to
I had fun once.
Yeah, I had fun the one time. Screenplay by Peter Young, Vance Gerry, Steve Hewlett, Ron Clements, John Musker, Bruce Morris, Matthew O'Callaghan. I'm going to say what I wrote down, but I think that's wrong. Berna Martinson? I'm guessing it's the same director. Bernie Madison, David Michener, and Mel Shaw, who also wrote for The Black Cauldron, The Fox and the Hound, The Jungle Book, Pocahontas, Tarzan, and Bambi. So one of these writers was like 85 years old in that writer's room. Like, what if we kill the mom? And they were like, we'll just have the dad abducted and we'll say the mom's not in the picture. We don't need to say dead.
Did they all write one page of this movie? Like, how many fucking writers do you need?
Everybody's throwing out ideas.
Story typically for these films back in the day, it's not like you sit down and you like write your script. It's storyboarded, kind of like what's the movie, and then they add dialogue. It's kind of like how they used to make old comic books, which is why I have issues with Stan Lee, but that's for another podcast.
Wow.
Based on the story, The Basil of Baker Street, and inspired by Sherlock Holmes author Arthur Conan Doyle.
Arthur O'Connor is what I thought you were about to say. I was like,
The movie starred Barry Ingham as Basil, who you may know from Day of the Jackal, A Challenge for Robin Hood, and Josh Kirby Time Warrior 1 through 6. There's 6 Josh Kirby Time Warrior movies, so let me know if you ever heard of those before I just said that.
Nope.
Val Bedden as Dawson, who was a voice actor in Tarzan, Trek, and he was the Sultan in 42 episodes of Aladdin the TV series.
Oh, he's the dad, like the professor or whatever in Tarzan.
Yes.
No.
I think so.
No.
Suzanne Palachuk as Olivia. This is her only film or TV credit.
Wow.
Candy Candido as Fidget, who you might know from Robin Hood, Charlotte's Web, and he was even in The Wizard of Oz. This was his last voice role. Candy Candido, who was Fidget.
Who was he in The Wizard of Oz?
I don't know.
Dylan.
Honestly, Gab, these were all.
I have it here. Do you want to know?
Yes.
Sure.
He was the angry apple tree.
Yeah, like.
Good for him.
If you look up Candy Candido, like, I remember there was a clip that was just like the voices of Candy Candido, and it's all like, I thought this was this man's actual voice, that the girl is the kid, but that's not what he actually sounds like. He can actually like sing beautifully, and he just has like a very impressive vocal range.
Wow.
Well, he was also the Indian chief in Peter Pan, so his thing was how.
Oh, yes, I remember that. Dylan, do you remember when we were kids, we used to take my dad's shoes and put our knees in them and do the Lollipop Guild? Do you recall? Okay, I told that story the other night. Corey thought it was hilarious. I was like, did you not do that when you were growing up?
I presume that every child who's watched The Wizard of Oz has done that or has tried to jump out the window like a flying monkey.
Yes, obviously.
Yeah. Last one, Vincent Price as Ratigan, who you may know from The Ten Commandments, The House of Usher. The original version of The Fly, House of Wax, House on Haunted Hill, of course, from Thriller. He was Egghead in the 60s Batman series. And in The 13 Ghosts of Scooby-Doo, he was Vincent Van Gool.
Good for him.
Yeah.
The role of a lifetime.
Finally, we can get to our fun facts. During the recording of Vincent Price's lines, animators would sketch his exaggerated Shakespearean gestures and work them into the animated poses of Ratigan. Basil of Baker Street is named after Basil Rathbone, who played Sherlock Holmes in 14 films. Basil was also a name used by a disguised Holmes in Arthur Conan Doyle's The Adventures of Black Peter.
Also someone from Austin Powers.
Basil Exposition, yes.
Mm, yes.
Originally, Olivia was going to be older and intentionally be the love interest of Dawson. She was then changed to be a little girl so the audience would gain more sympathy for her.
Yeah. Wise.
When Fidget screams off-screen as he's being fed to Felicia, it's not Candy Candido screaming. Instead, it's an unused sound effect for the Haunted Mansion ride.
Oh, interesting.
That doesn't exist anymore.
The Haunted Mansion ride?
I don't think so. I think it's Guardians, like, of the
Guardians
Galaxy,
of the Galaxy now.
It is, yeah.
Oh, no, that's the Tower of Terror became the Guardians of the Galaxy ride.
Yeah. No, it's still the Haunted Mansion.
Oh, now it has... They just redid it, didn't they? Now it's got Rosario Dawson in it.
For what?
Hasan Minhaj.
Oh, because was she in the actual movie? They redid the Haunted Mansion movie.
The film they released in July and not October.
And unsurprisingly, bombed.
Yeah, didn't they just... Eddie Murphy did a version of that, right?
Like 01, 02, 03.
Yeah,
but that they had those characters in the ride.
Yeah,
that was a bomb too.
Yeah, it was a much more like from ride adaptation because it had those colorful characters, unlike Pirates, which take the song and nothing else.
Yeah, but they have Johnny Depp at the end of Pirates now.
Yeah. And Barbossa, I think.
So bad. Corey's never been. I want to go.
If I'm going to spend $2,000, I'm not going to Disney. You know what I mean?
$2,000? Are you out of your mind? It's like $15,000.
Yeah, then I'm not going to Disney. I'm going around the world for that kind of money. I'm not going
to
Florida.
You don't want to go on the real Millennium Falcon?
I want to drink blue milk.
Yeah.
It's a fucking blue dye.
It's not the same.
Oh. And there's
I'm with you, Gab. I want to go. I went for my part of my honeymoon. I want to go back. I want to take the kids.
Well, yeah. Now you have kids.
I mean,
feel
it makes sense.
I want to go before we have kids so we can like enjoy it and then do the kid shit.
I recommend going just as an adult because the funniest part is they'll like the actors will act at you and you just want to be like, it's okay.
You don't have to.
We both know what's going on. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to get fired.
Yeah.
I came in drunk. the last fun fact for the Great Mouse Detective. Uh-huh. The clock tower scene is the first major use of computer animation in a feature-length animated film. The same scene was also the first time a traditionally animated character was put inside a computer-generated background. So the clock gears were all CGI while Basil and Radigan are being drawn in there.
Sort of.
Wow.
Sort of.
So yeah, I saw this breakdown recently. It's actually really, really cool because the way that this changed, and I was watching this like on the TV I have in my family room, which is the biggest. And a lot of the times, like, obviously, Dylan, you're a big DCAU fan. The minute the javelins became CGI, I was like, this does not fit in this world. And so the use in this was really actually quite interesting, which is all the gears, because they're three-dimensional objects, were designed in wireframes. And then they were animated over with 2D. So that way it doesn't feel like you talked about the Hanna-Barbera effect. Where it's, that one rock is clearly the rock we have to look under because it's not painted into the background, where these were designed three-dimensionally and then painted over so that way all the proportions met, because animating gears turning by hand would have been an absolute nightmare.
The way the animator described in the behind-the-scenes thing I was seeing was there's a robot hand that's being programmed to draw with, like, literally it's a robot hand with a pen drawing each frame, and then they can draw the characters on it, which is going to be saving a lot of time, I presume, rather than one poor motherfucker's drawing gears for days.
We talked about crunch before. That one guy is just like, here's a clock, and he has an aneurysm because that's all he's been doing.
Fair.
Yeah, I think that is all of the fun facts I have.
Well,
so I guess that leaves us with one thing. Unless, Gab, are we doing the other segment? We're not doing the other segment.
No. What's the other segment?
We've been doing a pitch segment, but Gab looks unprepared.
Let's try.
Here's my quick pitch.
Pitch me hard.
Here's the pitch.
And pitch!
You just pitch?
I don't need to hear the pitch.
Okay, so let's pitch our version of either a sequel or a remake or whatever you want to do, a new thing of Basil of Baker Street.
Okay.
I'm the only one who's prepared, so I'll go first.
I can go first. I don't mind. I've been thinking about this because, like, post, 2019? Whenever Disney Plus launched, they did a lot of really terrible live-action remakes. It's like, not theatrical and Disney Plus. Like, in terms of not knowing what to do. And it's interesting because one of the things I liked most about the original film is, like, you actually get to play with the scale, right? Like, you talked about it, Gab. They're not like, we're in this mice world. Isn't this freaking great? It's like, no, you're in the human world. You could die any minute. Not that this plays with that to the same degree, but I thought, because we talked about, again, the Disney films we grew up with, we know those things, every single line, every single frame of it. And so when you saw Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, The Lion King, in my opinion, the worst culprit of that, where it's like, this is the same thing, right? Nothing is different. Where if you did a remake of this, I thought the fun would be like you cast unknown British talent to be the main characters. You could have it would you could debate which Sherlock and Watson you could throw in it for that cameo to continue the trend, but also kind of play up with more of the mystery. Like outside of knowing they're mortal enemies, we don't actually know why. Like outside of Radigan being a bad guy, like obviously this is only an hour long, but you could it would probably get padded for length. But if it was, you could even potentially have it just be a sequel with newer animation. That's been done before. So like, what's the next adventure when Dawson and Basil actually know each other, right? Like the one of my favorite little pieces of Sherlock Holmes trivia is when that sad woman comes in at the end, the thing she's talking about is a reference to the very first Sherlock Holmes story.
Interesting.
And
which
so
I totally would have watched Basil and the Emerald Ring right after.
Yeah, like the next adventure. Like, there were two rescuers films. Like, why not have them go outside of London? Like, what is like Basil being this intellectual? Like, so that, like, a remake is an option, but to the same degree, I think a sequel to this would have, obviously, we know how in it, like, quote unquote, relatively inexpensive this was for animation at the time. But what does an adventure of Basil and oh my gosh, is his name Dave? Yeah, David Dawson. What does that look like?
Say, it can't be Basil and Dave. Like,
no, but it's Dave. It's Major David Q. Dawson. What does an adventure look like with them going to the U.S.? Or heck, make it more like, do they go to China? Or
Scotland Yard.
Maybe. Or even like they go to Europe, right? They meet a bunch of like Italian mice. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would have been really cool because there are multiple books. But this is like
somebody has pushed the tower straight up. What do we do?
The Leaning Tower of Cheesa. Like it would have to be a lead, right?
Yes. I'm in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's unfortunate. There are a couple of these franchises that sort of just get left, right? They didn't remake it. They didn't make they didn't make a direct-to-video DVD sequel.
Yeah. All right. I like that. I'm going to go ahead and off the dome. I'm going to submit a crossover. So we take The Great Mouse Detective and we take All Dogs Go to Heaven and we make Toby the intersect point where Toby dies.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. I don't know.
Whoa!
I set off the
You're
dome,
going
but
way
listen,
darker, yeah.
It's dark. Toby is no longer with us. He's unalived. And
he does look like the friend. What's the friend who dies?
Oh God, I don't know.
Yeah, I'll look it up. It's okay.
I haven't. I saw that movie once, and it scarred me. I'll never watch it again. I can't watch anything with dogs.
Is it Itchy? Itchy. His brother is Itchy because they're both the same thing, right? They're both Dash Hounds. Or no, not Dash. One's a
Basset Hound.
Yeah.
Basset
so,
Hound.
Well, no. Itchy is a Dash Hound. What is Toby? Does he have a voice credit?
No. I think it's Frank Welker is the one.
It's probably Frank. I was going to say it's got to be Frank Welker.
I think it's like his first Disney.
No, it's not.
Oh.
Mike Gabriel.
I sworn.
Oh, no, that's Frank animation. I lied. Don't listen to me.
Dom DeLuise.
He's a Basset Hound. So he's a Basset Hound. Maybe he's friends with Itchy.
Yeah. Something. But I just feel like that could be the crossover. And then there's the mice. Because there are other animals in All Dogs Go to Heaven. I think.
There's a big,
according
like,
to the title.
There's a cat. There's like the Godfather, the mobster cat.
Yeah. That was not a Disney movie, no?
No. I think it's Warner Brothers.
Oh, interesting. I could not, you couldn't pay me enough to watch that right now.
Ironically, also Don Bluth.
Interesting.
Who released this movie?
Oh, remember Oliver and Company? That's a fucking great Disney movie.
I have no memory of that movie.
Yes, you do, Dylan. Fucking Billy Joel did the song.
Why should I worry?
Why should I worry? Why should I care? Yeah, that's my Billy Joel impression. He played it at Madison Square Garden.
He better. It's like his one Disney song. You got to do that.
It's a fucking jam.
I thought you were going to say it's like his one song.
It's the only good song in the movie, though. Like, there's that one where the, like, poodle's walking down the stairs.
Yeah. Oliver and Company is a great movie, and I'm pretty sure it's Disney.
It was the one just before Little Mermaid, I think, or just after.
Billy Joel does the voice of the Artful Dodger. He doesn't just sing the song. And then Dom DeLuise, who played the dead dog in the other movie, plays Fagin in this movie. And I'm not sure which character that is.
Fagin's but, the oh, hobo, the man, the human being.
I know Dom DeLuise. He's the fat guy.
That is somewhat what he was known for, Dom DeLuise. He was a good comic actor as well, yes.
Yeah, and I know. He wore the hat and was fat. The fat in the hat, if you
will. Oh, my God. Sure. Sure.
Did you say the fat in the hat?
You sure did. Yes.
Yes.
Here's my pitch.
Yeah, go ahead.
Basil and Dawson are called to France to solve a string of restaurant equipment being stolen. They know it's being stolen by other mice. Basil's knowledge of crime is teamed up with Remy the Rat's knowledge of restaurants to find that Ratigan has survived and is stealing from restaurant equipment to start extorting French restaurants once he's taken all of their equipment, all of their snails, and all of their frog legs.
Is Ratigan like half doll parts at this point? Because he fell like...
He's fused on frog legs as his own legs now, so he can hop.
Wow. And because he's in France, frog legs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right. What you did
there. It's clever.
Dylan, you were obviously the only one who actually did their homework. Nice job. Well done.
I came up with that in a solid 30 seconds.
Wow. I love it. I love it. So do the mice change their opinion on rats? After having spent, like, is it like, is
that's
it
what the movie's about? It's all about prejudice.
Yeah. They don't want to trust him, but they have no choice. He's their only hope. Yeah, this is great.
We get story credit.
Yeah.
Like the nine guys who worked on this.
Yeah, exactly.
Patton Oswalt is Remy and Tom Holland is Basil.
That is great. Okay. Welp.
I think we can get to our verdicts now.
I think it's time.
Two. Or do not. There is no try.
The guilty will be punished.
Sentence is death.
Kyle, go ahead. Plead your case.
It does feel cruel when we do this to a guest. Kyle, you just talked about it for an hour. Tell us whether or not your movie sucks by this point.
Yeah.
So I think it's really interesting. It's a... So I'm in this era now, like being a father. I've had my eldest is now six, but you revisit a lot. We talked about this not being one that's been, I haven't showed them yet, but with there being, and I feel this as an adult, so just bear with me. I know I'm going to be ADDing all over the place, but that's kind of my shtick, which is just in general, like there's always so much stuff, right? Like it's the genesis, I'm assuming, of your podcast. Like what should you actually watch before you die? And yes, we've talked about the Disney Renaissance films, but like, honestly, out of that batch, I'd say there's probably only three you need to see out of that 10-year gap. Little Mermaid, Aladdin, and Beauty and the Beast. I would say you don't need to see any of the other ones.
Lion King? You don't need to see?
Lion King?
Sorry, and Aladdin? Lion King, the four. I said Aladdin. Sorry, Lion King is the fourth one. But I was like, no.
Don't you sleep on Mulan.
No, but I'm just saying in general.
Is the best Disney song ever.
But I think Gab, I think, provided a great example for why, which is that as great as all those films are, it created an identity for this animation studio that I would say has been a hindrance for, we're going on 40 years of them doing the same thing over and over. And we're seeing like people who grew up on those films, they might be slightly older than us, if not in our age range, are now making them. And it's like, there used to be a unique quality to Disney animation where they would have these weird ass films where, like, I wouldn't say it is one of these, I don't know if you've done it yet, but like something like the great Mouse Detective and then 101 Dalmatians. Like, it's a weird era for Disney, but if you're gonna watch anything from quote unquote the dark ages of Walt Disney's films, this is the one I think you need to watch. It feels the most complete. A lot of those films feel kind of derivative of each other, and with a lot of those franchises, ironically, getting more stuff. There is a Jungle Book 2. It was in the direct-to-video era. There, Sword in the Stone might be the most boring Disney film of all time because it's based on the Once and Future King, which is 8,000 pages long or whatever it might be. And even the Dalmatians got a sequel. So for a film to feel this, a unique example of what Disney's kind of edges could be, and a lot of credit goes to later animated films, things like Shrek moving forward, like 2000s onward, for having like stuff for the adults. Like, we're all adults and we watched it and we were perfectly aware of what all like the adult humor was. And the fact that Disney did this in 1986, 24 years before, 25 years before Shrek did it, I think that's really interesting. So it's a great microcosm of this interesting era in Disney before the Broadway musical became the only thing they wanted to do. And I'm not going to argue they shouldn't have. It's some of the best Broadway musicals, period, came out of an animation studio. But if you wanted to actually pitch something that's about character, which is what this is, the whole film ultimately is about Basil learning to not be an asshole because he's an independent person, Sherlock Holmes being the same thing. So it's an introduction to an avenue of fiction that you wouldn't really get from anything else. Like, I've brought up a couple versions of Sherlock throughout our conversation we've had today. And even with the character being completely copyright free, it's really separated in terms of good adaptations of that character. And this being one being in 1986, that was actually an original idea, I think also helps this film, where it provides this unique thing that ironically Disney had done before. But if you guys had me on to talk about The Rescuers, I wouldn't look at them nearly as well as I looked at this. You have an iconic villain, songs that were earworms, Dylan brought it up earlier, and the adventure of this was fun. It wasn't just, let's go find MacGuffin. You actually had characters with conflict.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't you go next?
Okay. It will not surprise either of you that I really thought about calling in sick to not have to watch this movie. And I spent the $3 and I loaded it up and I was like, listen, I'm going to go sit in the bedroom and watch this. It's going to take me like an hour and 15 minutes. You don't have to come, but just check on me, make sure I'm still breathing every so often. And I turned it on and I was like, okay, we're going to go right into the darkness. This little bitch lost her dad. She's alone. She's crying. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to need to call my therapist after this. The mice are micing and there's all this. We got to find this guy. He's going to help and da, da, da. And before I knew it, it was over. And I thought to myself, that wasn't so bad. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, I'd watch it again. And I think the biggest redeeming factor of this film is Vincent Price. And I love him. I think he is so good. It was so clear that it was his gestures and he was so, you know, paramount to the making of this character. And I think the other mice were fine. I didn't really particularly care for any of them. It did feel like an older Disney film that we would have watched when we were kids, like not one of the major ones that you just named, but it had that same feeling. It brought me back because Disney movies like that do not exist today. And, you know, it was a painless watch. And I have no reason to say no.
Wow.
I know.
I think this clearly shows that brevity is the way to Gab's heart. If you can if you can come in under an hour and a half, Gab will say yes to anything, I think.
Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off. I'm just curious before we get to yours, based on what Gab had to say, which was, so the apprehension beforehand, I'm curious, what was that? Did you watch a trailer and you're like, ooh? Or it was just the whole, it being called The Great Mouse Detective?
First of all, it was just the fact that it's an animated film, which I typically don't gravitate toward. And second, thinking about like the time period and just like those sorts of stories. And even though I did look up that it was such a short movie, because I always look up the running time so I know when I can watch it. That era tends to be very slow moving.
Yeah,
regardless
fair.
Of how short the film might be. So I was really expecting this to be like a dragging of the feet, but okay. It wasn't. It moved very quickly. Dill?
So it comes down to me.
It does.
I'm going to be honest, guys. Coming into this podcast, I come in and 90% of the time my opinion's not going to change. And I came into this thinking, I think if I'd seen it as a kid, I'd say yes. I think seeing it as an adult, I'm not going to say yes. And you know what? I think Kyle's verdict won me over with his description of how this is like the last remnant of Disney doing something different, and that there is something special about that, how it is breezy, how it does have a couple of earworms, because I can guarantee you it might be a week, a month, a year from now, but my brain will go back to O'Radigan at some point. And I can tell you, I was trying to describe Vincent to Giselle, who did not watch this movie with me, because I was just like, I just want us both to be doing the vine. I just want to do the vine.
It's like Gollum before Gollum.
Yeah. Yes, I love it.
I'm too young to die. My foot, my only foot.
And you know what? I think we're gonna agree. It's a movie to watch before you die.
Yeah.
I can't believe this is and Mask of Zorro isn't.
I can't believe it either. Yeah. Now, hold on. Before we continue to celebrate, I'm going to throw out some titles here, and I'm going to need you to give me, both of you, a yes or a no, and it better not be the wrong fucking answer. Number one, The Aristocrats.
Aristocats?
Sorry, cats.
In terms of what? Like, if just a movie yes, to watch like before it? You die?
Just like a good Disney film.
Yes. So,
it's a yes or a no.
It's no, just because the Siamese cats thing didn't work for me then. It doesn't work for me now.
Fine. Like, How about Lady and the Tramp?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Hold on. Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah. I would say the Notre Dame owes Great Mouse Detective a lot.
Huh. I would say no to Pocahontas and Hunchback of Notre Dame.
I would say yes to Hunchback, no to Pocahontas.
Pocahontas is amazing.
It's got a great song. Yeah.
I loved Pocahontas.
I'm not saying you asked for our opinion. I was saying Gab's opinion is it's great.
Now Gab will tell you if your opinion is wrong.
That should be our next segment.
Mulan. This motherfucker said no to Mulan.
No, I'm going to celebrate the fact that my TED talk worked. But it was just kind of explained the microcosm of that era. I love those films. Like those Melody didn't have screen time till she was two. And the first things we went through when she could sit for an hour and 20 or whatever, we went through the Disney Renaissance. Like, so we started with Little Mermaid and we worked our way through those. Mulan's fantastic. I think I'm just mad because the remake was so terrible.
I haven't watched a single one of these live action remakes, and you're not going to get me to.
Jungle Book would be the one to watch is Jungle Book, because the anthology nature of the actual short stories that they made into the animated film, there's no through line. So they radically changed the script and the story structure for the live action film. I would argue the live action Jungle Book is better than the cartoon. Outside of the music.
But the best version of Robin Hood is the animal one.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That fox was hot. Sorry, just saying. Well, listen, this has been great. You've gotten me to agree to this animated film. I would love to watch it again. Maybe someday I'll make Corey watch it. But the longer you disparage Mulan, the more I want to take it back. So let's just call it here.
I love Mulan, but it's not on the same category as
stop talking about how much you hate Mulan.
I love Mulan. My sister was Mulan for like four Halloweens in a row.
Kyle, do you want to plug yourself as something other than a hater of Mulan?
do I want to plug myself?
Also, don't you hate The Lion King too?
No, The Lion King's my favorite of all the Disney Renaissance films.
Okay, good.
I just sort of lost count off the top of my head. I think the best one is Beauty and the Beast. It was nominated for Best Picture. That's only happened three times.
What were the other two?
It was Up and Toy Story 3.
Up. Up. Can we talk about Up?
It's overrated.
Get this man off my podcast.
What are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about the first 15 minutes. The first 15 minutes is some of the greatest animation of all time. It's all incredible. Time. Absolutely. I'm not going to argue on
but
that part.
But then they have the dog.
I'm good if I Kyle's never watch that movie again.
Why?
It's phenomenal, but I do not need that sucker punch again.
Yeah.
I went into
I
Happy
I feel that
Pixar
way about Toy
movie
Story 3.
And I was like, oh, fuck
love
me
Toy
in the
Story
heart.
3.
Oh, Toy Story 3 is tough because so when Toy Story came out, I was like of that age. And then my brother and I have a 14-year age gap. So when Toy Story 3 came out, I was going to college, but he was starting kindergarten and my mom like had a full-blown meltdown.
That's a gut punch from both sides. Oh,
yeah, yeah,
goodness.
Yeah, it was hard. Yeah.
Sorry, you know, I'm supposed to plug myself. I have to get my book. When's this come out, Dylan?
Never.
Okay.
2 weeks.
Because it made the list. Sorry?
2 weeks from Friday.
So that is the April 1st?
Yes. Yes.
No,
April 5th.
No, April 5th?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I wrote this down because I'm terrible at scheduling. So I am the host of the Film Realist podcast, the film and TV podcast from a complete nobody. That is hopefully for somebody. So I review movies, premiere TV shows, all sorts of things. Occasionally have fun guests on to talk about them as well. So if you're hearing this, the upcoming Monday, I will be reviewing Monkey Man, the directorial debut of Dev Patel. It's been described as Bollywood John Wick. So I'm really looking forward to talking about that, as well as the conclusion of Invincible Season 2, Part 2. So I'm on all the socials for that stuff. So if you want to follow me there, you can follow the hijinks of the video form of the podcast on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And then I'm available on all the platforms for audio listening.
Dylan, when you heard Monkey Man, what did you think of? 3, 2, 1. Hey Arnold.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not Mojo Jojo.
No, Jojo is Mojo Jojo, but Hey Arnold specifically has the character of Monkey Man who can't stop talking about, and he just goes Monkey Man. Like, he has like a tick. Kyle, nobody has ever done a better job plugging themselves. I got to tell you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Props to you.
Beautiful. Great job.
Do I take pride in plugging myself?
You had a book ready.
Go plug yourself.
It's my podcast journal. It's the first issue of Batman number one.
Wow.
Very good.
Very nice.
Gab, plugs.
All right. Send us an email at moviestowatchbeforeyoudie@gmail.com. Send us a voice note at anchor.fm/moviestowatch. You can send me money on Venmo. You can listen to our friends at the podcasting Hall of Pods.
The Hall of Pods podcasting network is in the link tree below. And in the link tree below, you can find us and all of our social and things like that. We're on every audio platform. I think that's all the things. Come back next time when we talk about another movie.
Another movie. Kyle, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me again. I'm glad something I watched made the list.
I can't believe of all the movies in the world, it was this one.
I finished the movie and went, oh man, I'm going to go over 2.
Well, not when it's this short, you're not. All right. Thank you guys. I hope you both have a great night, and I'm going to go eat dinner.
What's for dinner?
I don't know, whatever was in that bag he had. So it's a surprise for all of us.
Get the following. Tools, check. I got tools. Gears, double check. I got gears. Girl, no, didn't get girl. Uniforms, I got plenty of uniforms.